And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's going on? DJ and Bucky back on Move the Sticks as we power through the summer. And Buck, fortunately, the NFL world has given us some things to talk about.
Man, they always give us stuff to talk about. Like the stuff that is happening, DJ, I'm gonna be honest with you. Like, part of when you get into the scouting business and you get into it is because it's not as volatile as the coaching business. But I'm beginning to think that that little narrative, that belief, yeah, I don't think that exists anymore. It doesn't exist. With the stuff
that
we've seen.
It's been absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. I just have never seen the volatility at the general manager, player personnel positions. That's supposed to be a stabilizing position, a position where you're thinking long range. And so when you're in a team building, you're thinking about how can I build this team that and win and sustain it over time. Man, the way you keep swapping out guys at the top, it just makes it very, very hard to be able to sustain it.
No doubt, and we're going to get into that. The NFL has seen two general managers lose their job after the draft, which is something that doesn't normally happen. We're going to touch on those two situations there with the Jets, as well as what recently went down with the Houston Texans. Talk about Carson Wentz and his new contract. What does that mean going forward for the rest of these quarterbacks searching for some new money? Bucky had an interesting scouting trip that he's returned from, so we're going to get some feedback from Buck there on that trip. We have a great conversation. You're going to enjoy this. If you enjoy the team building aspect, and that's something we always talk about here on the Move the Sticks podcast, you can incorporate this not only as a football fan and learn more about it from that standpoint, but you can take some of these lessons into your job, into the workforce. It can help you there. Because we're going to talk with Tom Telesco, general manager, has built one of the most talented rosters there with the Chargers. And then after that, Buck, we talked about player stocks that we're buying. We're going to get into team stocks we're buying.
Oh, I like that. I like it because I think there are a ton of teams that you have to be excited about based on what they've been able to do in the offseason when you put all of the things together, the draft, free agency, and how their young players are developing. A lot of optimism. A lot of optimism in the league.
Absolutely. Let's start off first here. The New York Jets have a new general manager. It is Joe Douglas. This is not a surprise to many folks. It was long presumed that Joe was going to be the number one target there for the Jets. He's worked with Adam Gase there in Chicago for a year when Joe was a director of college scouting before he moved over to Philadelphia. They move on from Mike Maccagnan. I know they talked to a bunch of different candidates, but they got their guy. And to me, the most interesting thing about the whole story, and I can tell the folks more about Joe as I worked with him and known him for 20 years, maybe not that long. How many years? 16, 17 years. Anyways, we know each other for a very long time, so I can fill the folks in a little bit more about Joe. But I thought from our perspective on this side of things, Buck, the interesting thing was not the money that Joe got; it was the years. When you have a head coach on a 4-year contract, and now you bring a general manager on in a 6-year contract, as it was reported, I think that tells us a little something.
Well, I think it tells us a lot. I think that was probably one of the biggest things that you want to negotiate and haggle over if you're a general manager. You don't want to be tied to the coach. We've seen how that necessarily goes. When the coach goes, then the general manager goes. You want, as the general manager, you want to have the opportunity to, if it's not going the right way on the field in terms of the way the players are developing, the way the team is performing between the lines, you want to have the opportunity to bring in your own coach. And so because Adam Gase is already there, Joe D wants to have the opportunity that, look, if it doesn't go the way that everyone wants it to go, you want to have the opportunity to be able to find somebody that can fix it and do it more so in your vision. So it's just a little protection to make sure that you have an opportunity to kind of build this program the right way.
Yeah, for those that are wondering if you're a Jets fan and what you're getting here in Joe Douglas, I tweeted out a little bit about him. I said my cliff notes there. It's just, hey, look, he's very detailed. He's very smart. He's organized. He's an outstanding evaluator. One of the best things I can say about Joe, he doesn't have an ego. You know, he spent 15 years with the Baltimore Ravens learning under Ozzie Newsome, and that's one of the things I took away from Ozzie. Two things. Number one, he didn't have an ego. Number two, he's a great listener. And Joe has both those qualities that are going to serve him well there with the Jets. Now, in terms of team building and stylistically what he wants to do, Joe was an offensive lineman. Joe believes in the trenches offensively, defensively. And I think if you look at this Jets team, the reason why there was a change, there was a failure to get that offensive line where it needed to be. And I imagine that'll be the first focus there for Joe as he goes into the next offseason to get the offensive line where it needs to be and get the defensive line, continue to add reinforcements. They've got some nice pieces there in that defensive front with Leonard Williams, now Quinnen Williams, but he's going to throw reinforcements at the line of scrimmage. That's who he is. That's what he believes in, and that's what you can expect going forward.
Oh, I think you have to be strong up front. I think when you look at today's game and you've seen the best teams are the teams that are the guys that can impose their will on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And so when you're looking at the New York Jets and you're looking at what they have on their roster, their crown jewel is the quarterback in Sam Darnold. So if you want to do everything in your power to protect them, yes, you need to surround them with playmakers, but you also need to make sure that you have a rock-solid offensive line in front of him. Knowing Joe's background, knowing how he wants to be rough and rugged at the point of attack, they have to do a better job of investing in that offensive line, making sure that they have premier players at the point of attack. And then also knowing the background. We saw what Philadelphia was able to do when they won the Super Bowl. They were able to throw waves of defensive linemen and pass rushers at the quarterback. You've seen what Baltimore has been able to do traditionally. Their defensive front, their front seven, their front four, been able to consistently get after the passer. We know that a lot of their focus and emphasis will be on fortifying the trenches, making sure that they can kind of play the rough and tumble ball that is necessary to win the AFC East.
I did find it kind of funny, Buck, in that, you know, look, it doesn't matter. You could go hire, look, if Bill Walsh was still living and you hired him as a head coach tomorrow, there'd be a crowd of people on Twitter that would tell you everything that's wrong with Bill Walsh, and he just had great players, mm-hmm. had nothing to do with him. People always looking to complain. So this complaint that I've seen on social media I got a kick out of was, if you look at the Philadelphia Eagles drafts over the last few years, they only have this many starters, and they've been very average, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying, you know why you're a great organization? And having come from where Joe came from and I was there and saw it firsthand, is you can draft Terrell Suggs when you have two big-time pass rushers already on your roster. He doesn't have to start right away because you draft the best player available. You can go draft Todd Heap when you have Shannon Sharp. So after a year, you say, oh, no, Todd Heap didn't start a game. He didn't even start a game. That's a missed pick. Like, they're going to say, was Dallas Goedert a missed pick? Because I think Dallas Goedert's going to be an outstanding pro, but they already had Zach Ertz. Derek Barnett, you already had Brandon Graham, and a whole host of defensive linemen there. All I know is you get in the playoffs, he was making big-time plays. You're good organizations because you have roster depth and your young guys don't have to fill big-time roles early on. So I find that criticism to be kind of funny.
Yeah, I think it is kind of funny. I think also a lot of the criticism when it comes to the draft, I think, is overblown. I know, like, we're in the business of talking about the draft and discussing it, but let's be honest. It's a first and second round league. You have to hit on your first round picks, and you need to be very, very solid on your second round picks. Anything beyond that is really gravy. And if you ask any executive when they talk about their third, fourth, fifth, sixth round pick, they typically don't have high expectation that those guys are going to come and be blue level starters. If they are, it's either because they had character concerns, which led
them
to fall.
Your team stinks.
or it was literally just a miss. The league missed on the player. But you have to evaluate rosters on what they're able to do in the first round and really the second round. Beyond that, it's really a crapshoot. And so I think so much of what we hear about when it comes to evaluating rosters and that stuff, people talk about, oh, well, they didn't get a fourth-round pick, whatever. Those guys are coin flips anyway. Really focus on what they did in the early rounds. Those are the guys that are your foundational pieces.
Yeah, and to keep that kind of theme alive, if everything goes according to plan, Andre Dillard, the Eagles' first-round pick this year, he's not going to play much this year either.
But, no.
Because you draft the best available player, it's for the future.
And that's what it is. It is really about best player available. And I know you would like your team needs to kind of match up with what the supply is, but you can never go wrong when you take good players because it only elevates the talent on your roster and it gives you an opportunity to eventually spin off some of those things that you have a surplus of to get back what you need down the road.
All right, before we get to this Texans situation here, last thing, we'll put a bow on it there with Joe Douglas and the Jets. I do want to encourage Jets fans on this one, because a lot of times we've talked about it a bunch in here. In the draft room, when you're with your scouting buddies, could be on the road, could be in your own building, you can have a pretty heated debate, you know, about this guy versus that guy. And sometimes you need to let it play out and see who's right and who's wrong. And I've never been shy about it. You haven't been shy about it. We talk about our misses, guys we got wrong. And there's one point in time where me and Joe, I might have been even by myself on this one, and you'll realize why. There's a couple guys in the Ravens scouting room, and we got pretty heated, and it went back and forth and went over text messages. And then over time, it's become a knockout blow. There's no question. I was wrong on this one, and they were right. Because early 2000s, Buck, we had a discussion, Chevy Chase versus Bill Murray, and I went team Chevy Chase. I went hard with Chevy Chase. I had the vacations on my side. I like the vacation movies. It's a great one. Spies
National
Like
Lampoons.
Us. Three Amigos. I mean, I felt I had a pretty strong Fletch. Are you kidding me? Fletch? I like Fletch.
He had a strong one. He came out the box. Came out the box strong.
Strong. And then really a fade there. And Bill Murray came back with more life, and Bill Murray started still spitting out good ones. And eventually, sometimes as an evaluator, you have to throw your hands up and say, okay, I got that one wrong.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of judgment you have there from your new general manager. I think Jets fans ought to feel good about that.
We're going to have hits and misses on actors and comedians and all of that other stuff. It goes beyond the prospects when you're listening to Move the Sticks. We give you a little bit of everything, a little pop culture.
We can go deeper. All right, give me your thoughts here on what went down with the Texans.
Man, I have no idea. Like, this is crazy because, like, we've seen this happen twice where Bill O'Brien has been able to win a power struggle, I guess, and he's kind of like the Lord of the Rings. He's able to get whatever he wants done despite what some people would say just an average record, an average production and performance from his team. But evidently, Bill O'Brien and Brian Gaines had a falling out, didn't necessarily see eye to eye, even though the Texans are coming off a season where they were 11-5. They have a hot young quarterback in Deshaun Watson. They have a very, very talented roster, particularly when you look at J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, some of the other pieces that they have in place. But for whatever reason, Bill O'Brien, Brian Gaines, they're not seeing the game the same way. And so Brian Gaines is out, even though he still has, 3 years left on his deal that he just
I think it was four. I think it was one year into his 5 years.
I mean, he's talking about a year into it. And so, this is a big surprise. This is a major shakeup. And so we'll see. They've already interviewed Ray Farmer. They've interviewed Martin Mayhew, which our Peter Schrager recently reported. But, man, I think you might have a tough time getting somebody to take this job, just because we've seen the volatility that has occurred over the last 2 years.
A couple thoughts on this. The first thought from me is we usually talk about a championship window closing. We used to do this back in the day of, okay, your quarterback's getting up there in his mid-30s. That window's closing. There is urgency. There's pressure. You've got to win right now. And then it's kind of flipped to where when you have a young quarterback who's so cheap, there's pressure on you during that five-year period where you've got a cost-controlled quarterback to go for it. And we've seen it. We've talked about it a billion times on here, what the Eagles did, what the Rams have done, building around that quarterback that started with the Seattle Seahawks with Russell Wilson. So having some urgency to build this thing with that young quarterback. Well, now this is going into year three here with Deshaun Watson, who's one of the most talented young quarterbacks we have in the league. I think this, to me, shows there is some urgency with this organization. We need to win right now. And in the context of this division, the Indianapolis Colts, that was just the beginning for them last year. Mm-hmm. They have done a wonderful job under Chris Ballard of building up this roster. They've got an immensely talented quarterback in Andrew Luck. And that machine, the money that they have, they have already paid Andrew Luck. They have plenty of money. Yeah. Plenty of money. So that team is coming up. You've got the Jacksonville Jaguars who stumbled last year, but extremely talented. The Tennessee Titans are not an easy – that's not an easy opponent. They're going to be – they've been stuck in that 9-win range, but it's a good opponent. So where this division is, where the quarterback is, this move to me with 4 years left on a general manager's contract speaks to urgency. And, Buck, You know, maybe I'm crazy, but I'll be shocked if this is not somebody from the New England tree. They've tried going in different directions. Monty Austin-Ford, somebody we know really well there with the Patriots, one of the bright young guys in the league. And we'll see if they can ever pry Nick Cesario out from under Bill Belichick. I don't know if they'll be able to get him. But to me, it points towards somebody with a close connection to Bill O'Brien.
How about Scott Pioli? Scott Pioli recently resigned.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah.
The Atlanta Falcons. He obviously knows the Patriot way. He has done a really good job. He's kind of changed his personality and the way that he is perceived to be in the media. He could be a guy that steps in and gives Bill O'Brien the structure that he wants in terms of maybe trying to recreate some of the things that they were able to do in New England. I would keep an eye on him. I think the big thing, Bill O'Brien is look, he's on the clock. He's on the clock in terms of, like, he has all the power. He is the one that is really kind of making this move happen. And so you got to see more wins, more production. And we've seen them win and get into the playoffs, but now we need to see them win in a major way because you're right. The urgency is there because Deshaun Watson is on his rookie deal. And we're seeing how these deals are coming up with a new CBA. Who knows how much money the quarterback will command, and it's going to be challenging to continue to build your team when your quarterback is commanding so much of the salary cap pie.
Yeah, and we talk about the urgency to win right now, and that's going to be fascinating to watch what happens with Jadeveon Clowney as a little aside there. We'll see. I know last year we saw Khalil Mack get traded, obviously very late into the process. I just wouldn't sleep on that. As long as they don't have a deal done and they've got other players they can win with at those positions, it'd be interesting to see what they do there. If they get a new general manager in place, a fresh set of eyes to go together with Bill O'Brien and say, hey, you know, maybe this is a time we try and maximize what we could get for him. If they do, in fact, make a move there. So that'll be an interesting subplot there in that situation.
Very interesting because Jadeveon Clowney wants to get paid. He wants to get big-time money. We've seen the money that has been going to pass rushers Frank Clark and Dee Ford, DeMarcus Lawrence. Jadeveon Clowney is going to want to be in that range. And so when you put him alongside J.J. Watt, you understand what they have in terms of their foundation on defense. It's just a matter of can they get a multi-year deal done. And with some of the reports and rumors coming out that Bill O'Brien and Jadeveon Clowney don't see the game eye to eye. They're not necessarily on the same page. Maybe they don't like each other. We'll see. It may take a general manager that is able to bridge the gap and kind of handle some of those conversations that will need to be handled when it comes to Jadeveon Clowney's representation and even the player himself. So we'll see how it plays out, but this is a critical time for the Houston Texans. They have to get this hire correct.
Absolutely. And talk about whether or not they're going to pay Jadeveon Clowney. One guy who did get paid here quickly is Carson Wentz.
Ooh-wee.
That big deal came down. He got a lot of change. He got a lot of change there, Buck. And to me, I don't have a problem with it at all. I thought, look, let's get this distraction over with, get him taken care of. Was playing well last year. Gosh, he was completing almost 70% of his passes in the 11 games that he played. Unfortunately, has the injury. But you go back and look at the Super Bowl year, and Foles obviously gets the credit for what took place at the end of the season, the postseason, getting that Super Bowl to Philadelphia. But Carson Wentz was going to be the MVP. If he had stayed healthy that year, he was going to be the MVP in the National Football League. So the talent is without question.
Yeah, the talent is certainly there. The talent is there. He was the second overall pick. He's a big, strapping, strong-arm playmaker guy that can do it athletically. He can move around and make plays with his feet, can give you the zone run, quarterback run game stuff that you want, can also make plays from the pocket. He has been spectacular when he's been healthy. The issue that some people will have, the injury history. He's kind of been beat up a lot, was hurt at North Dakota State. He's been banged up a little bit as a pro. And so you're kind of wondering, are you going to be able to really see him be an MVP caliber player for a long time? I think it was actually in Carson Wentz's best interest to take the deal now as it was offered. When you've had the injuries that he's had, you want to make sure that, hey, let's secure the bag. I know that I could probably play it out and maybe get more, but let's secure the bag. Let's tie my future to the Philadelphia Eagles for a long term. And even if the CBA kind of opens up the freeway when it comes to the amount of money quarterbacks could make going forward, I think it's better for Carson Wentz to do a deal now that would put him in that $32 million range and allow him to be the face of the franchise going forward for the Eagles.
Yeah, I think from the Eagles' standpoint, just kind of a, really the timing was all about accounting and where you kind of fit money in, and this was a good opportunity for them. They have the space. They have the room. Go ahead and get this done right now. That's something that Howie Roseman has done as well as any general manager in the NFL, manage that salary cap, know when the opportunities are to lock up your key guys, and none more key than the quarterback of your football team. So I thought it was smart for both parties to go ahead and get that thing done at this point in time. Buck, you just went on a recent scouting trip to Mobile, Alabama. Now, normally we're going to Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, and that's in January. What the heck were you doing out there this time of year?
So, look, this is a fascinating program, and I'm really excited about being a part of it. Jim Nagy had called. He invited a couple pro scouts, a current scout, Tim Terry, who is the pro director for the Kansas City Chiefs. He invited me to kind of represent the college side. Dan Hadman, who runs the Scouting Academy. He had decided to really open his doors at the Senior Bowl offices and invite former players in to learn about the scouting biz. He believes that former players could make very, very good scouts. He wanted to kind of give them a gateway to entry and expose them to the business. So for 2 days, I went and presented on everything that I know about being a scout, how to evaluate, how to go on the road, how to write reports, how to manage my schedule, how to deal with restrictions, how to conduct a school call and school visit, what to think about. And DJ, I'm going to be honest with you. It has been a while since I've kind of had like the scouting spirit stirred a little bit. It was stirred a little bit because, man, look, as much as there's some things that maybe we talk about the road being tough, there is something to the art of being able to evaluate players and to go through it and have conversations and to talk about one player over another player or to theorize about building a team. And so I got a chance to do that with these guys. And as much as I may have shared and gave, I think I came back learning even that much more. Sylvester Kroom came in and talked about running backs and building teams and offense and things to think about. And so it was really exciting to kind of be back in the mix, to look at a draft board, to look at the draft board that they already have in place and in line for the Senior Bowl, and to talk about some of the guys in the 2020 class. And so for me, it was a great opportunity, and I am thrilled that I had an opportunity to kind of give back and share.
That is so cool. I know something, I believe Phil Savage started there.
Yes.
When he was heading up the Reese's Senior Bowl, and Jim's done a great job of continuing on that tradition. And those types of opportunities, I'm glad the way you phrase that, Buck, because a lot of times you get invited to be in a circle of people, and they invite you in to share your knowledge. And like, if you're doing this thing right, you go in there, you share something, you're getting a whole lot more back, and that's part of just being an active learner. And that's something, man, you've done it this offseason, Buck. You go up to Canada, you've been to Mobile, getting all those ideas, and selfishly, I'm just going to try and steal them for the podcast here so we can roll.
No, DJ, it's been great. You know, like, the one thing, like, when you've scouted, you're kind of beholden to the team that you work for, right? And hopefully you've had good mentors. You certainly have had. I've had plenty of mentors when it comes to the people off the Ron Wolf tree, being able to spend time also in Carolina with John Fox and Marty Herney and Tony Softly and those guys. So you learn how to do it a couple different ways. But I'm a big believer that you always can learn from others. And so hearing Jim Nagy's stories where he spent time with the Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs and then the Seattle Seahawks, Dan Hadman, who had been with the Eagles and the Giants, and just listening to how guys have been taught the business, whether it's the grading scale or how you write reports or how you kind of think about players and evaluate tape and those things. To me, it was really kind of like a graduate level class in terms of just being able to get back to the nuts and bolts of the business. And sometimes in TV and the side that we're on, we still evaluate, we still do those things, but you can say it's a little different than when you work for a team. When you work for a team, it's a little more specific and tied to the team. Now we're kind of generalizing how we like players. And so sometimes it's good to kind of get back to the essence of what we got into it for, which was really evaluating players and trying to figure out a way to build the best roster to give your team a chance to compete for the title.
I love it. I love it, Buck. And I'm going to get with you offline here and get some more information on what went down there, because I think it's a great idea. And you could tell you it left you a little fired up.
Got me fired up about the biz again.
I love that.
I almost went like this weekend. Almost. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start just grinding away on the 2020 class. I'm going to get there. I'm going to do all these reports. I'm going to stack more board. And then I was like, hold up. You got plenty of time.
Once this train
slow
starts,
down.
It doesn't stop.
Slow
Buck.
Down a little bit. So I pumped my brakes a little bit. I didn't delve all the way into it, but I got my toe wet a little bit. Toe wet, talking about those guys.
I love it. Well, talking about team building leads us into this next conversation here. I had a chance a little bit earlier today to catch up with Tom Telesco from the Chargers. This is a team that's coming off a 12-win season, a loss to the Patriots there, second round of the postseason, a big win over the Baltimore Ravens, a team on the cusp of a Super Bowl run here. They are right there. And I love talking team building with Tom. Here's our conversation. Tom, we got plenty of time to talk about football and about your team, but I want to start off in another sport, in basketball, because as we've watched these NBA finals unfold, the Toronto Raptors have been a fascinating case study for any team builder such as yourself, and that I thought a pretty bold move to go out and get Kawhi Leonard, one of the top players in the NBA, knowing, hey, this might only be, you know, a one-year deal here for him. People thought, are they mortgaging the future? You know, is this an over-aggressive move? I love your thoughts on that. Just as a team builder, maybe taking a little bit of a bold step and what you think about how they've built that team.
Yeah, no, I mean, certainly when you sit in my seat, I'm always looking at different sports, different teams, how they're built. Actually, I was down at the Padres game yesterday against the Nationals, and we're just watching how the Padres built their team. But oh, you were there too? Back-to-back-to-back-to-back.
Four home runs in a row.
That was, we saw history at least. But watching the Raptors, how they put their team together, it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's, you know, I guess it is a bold move bringing Kyrie in for 1 year. Or Kawhi, I'm sorry. But Kawhi, if you've ever been to Toronto, it's a beautiful city. You bring him in for a year and try and sell him on staying in Toronto long term. They made the head coaching change, you know, after their head coach had been coached the year or two before. But they made some changes up front. They're a fun team to watch. They're athletic. They're active. You know, maybe they brought in Kawhi Leonard thinking, hey, let's get him in here for 1 year. And we'll make a run at this and hopefully sell him on our organization, on our city. And we keep them here long term. But boy, they're a fun team to watch. It's been a great series. I'm a big NBA basketball fan. I'm a big basketball fan in general. But it's been fun to watch.
I think people that are listening to this might be kind of surprised to know the general managers of the National Football League paying attention to what goes on in other sports and paying attention to how teams are built and constructed. Have you had built up some relationships across other sports throughout your years in your role?
Yeah, I've been very lucky, and that's what I love to do. That I love to talk to other GMs in baseball and basketball, hockey. I've made a lot of contacts over the years, and just to try and get some new ideas, learn from some really smart people everywhere I've been. And I think there's so many ideas you can gain from what other teams do. You know, it's not like I can call another NFL team and bounce ideas off them about what their processes are, different things that they do. So. Whether it's any sport, you know, I've been able to keep in contact with different GMs and just learn. I mean, there's really, really smart team builders out there. And there's so many different ways to build a team. There's not just one specific formula. So to talk with different people, get some different ideas, it's really, really helpful. And it's fun. I mean, if you love sports like I do, and I love all sports, it's fun talking with these other GMs and head coaches. And, you know, very lucky to be in the spot I am where I'm able to do that.
I love that. I think there is so much you can learn. I know a lot of folks have learned a lot from European soccer. We've seen that sports science impact kind of start over there and then really make its way over to the American sports leagues. With your team, the Chargers, let's get into that a little bit here. When I look at this team, I haven't, you know, seen and followed this team all year long, and now look at what you've done in the offseason. You know, I know you've got stars. You've got your Boses. You've got the Ingrams. You've got, obviously, Phillip Rivers and company. There's a lot of stars in this football team. But right now, when I look at it, the word depth is one that jumps out to me, Tom. When you look especially in that defensive front, the depth that you've been able to build up, was that really a focus for you kind of going in the offseason, is just be able to withstand the injuries that are inevitably going to come in an NFL season?
Yes. I mean, big focus to try and build as deep a 90-man roster as we can. And like you said, it's a long NFL season. You're going to have injuries. You're going to have players maybe at certain positions that don't perform the way you expect, and you need to have some depth behind them to step in and play. And that can be the difference between 9 wins and 12 wins. It could be the difference between winning the division and not winning the division. So, it was a huge focus this year just to add as much depth as we can going into training camp and still even right now to see what we can do. It's once you get into training camp, you know, you kind of are what you are. Maybe you get lucky and you could add a player here or there at different positions. The cut to 53 in the first week of September, you may be able to find a depth player here or there at certain positions. There's some position at that point, it's hard to find a player that can come in and contribute right away. But now we're still looking as we move into training camp, any places we can really strengthen ourselves for more competition going into camp, because we know, like, every team in the league, and not just us, every team in the league, we're going to have injuries throughout the way. We need to have players that can step in, keep that train moving, and still produce at a winning level as we wait for those starters to come back. And it takes more than 22 starters in this league. And like you said, on the defensive line, especially the way we play, and it's an active front. And to keep guys fresh, we want to be able to play eight guys, play nine guys up front to get after the quarterback.
I think that's a really kind of a trend we've seen for a long time in the NFL. Championship teams, those waves of talent they have up front on the defensive line go along with great quarterback play. That's a good foundation to have. Speaking of the quarterback, Philip Rivers, I did see Mr. Spanos came out the other day and said something will eventually get done here with his contract situation. He's going into the last year of his deal. I'm not going to get into you with, you know, where you're at in those negotiations, but I do know you have a lot of players that are coming due here pretty quick, star players. And when you see deals done at their position, you know, for instance, you see it in Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger deal come down, yep. Same draft class as the Philip Rivers. Then you see, you know, you've got Melvin Gordon, you see a Todd Gurley deal go down at the running back position. I'm just curious, with you and Ed McGuire, who's handled the cap for the Chargers for so long, when one of those deals goes down, do you guys kind of get together? Is there a meeting? Is there a conversation? Okay, what does this mean for us going forward?
Yeah, you know, first, Ed McGuire does a tremendous job, has been doing this job for a number of years, and is excellent at it. And, every time, a deal is done, at that position in that market, there's no doubt we'll sit down and talk about it. Ed breaks down every contract that comes in, but contracts like those, we'll sit down and talk about how it's going to affect us. And it's a good problem to have, that we have a lot of players on our football team, many that are homegrown, that we want to do extensions with. Our philosophy is draft, develop, resign. Now, can you do that with every single player that you draft? Not necessarily you can. But that's our philosophy, and then we'll supplement through free agency, on the back end. But we have some players that are up that we have to do some work on. And there's a market at every position, and those are the discussions you have with the other players' representatives and try and work through it. But like I said, it's a good problem to have, that we have a lot of players in a football team that we want to extend and keep here for a long time, with obviously, Philip being, an easy one right there.
Yeah, if you don't have any players you're looking to sign, I think you got real problems there. I think you'd much rather have these problems that you have right now with all these guys.
Yeah, good problems to have.
Last question. Absolutely. Last question on the Chargers here. Thomas Davis, I thought, was a fascinating signing. And when you look at the way the league's gone in free agency, youth has seemed to be what everybody's after. Obviously, everybody's trying to get younger. Is there opportunities like Thomas Davis where you can get veteran value, somebody like that with the experience, the knowledge he brings, the leadership? And I look at what you're able to get him for. It looked like a pretty darn good value you're able to get there.
Yeah, we thought so. We would all love to sign a UFA at any position as who's 25 years old and in the prime of their career. I'd love to have that. Financially, it's not always possible, and obviously those players don't come to market that are free very often. So we didn't set out to sign a 35, 36-year-old linebacker as we went into free agency, but as we watch Thomas play and we know his career at Carolina and see where the level of play still is, not to mention what he brings experience and character-wise to the locker room, which is a bonus. He played a position that we felt like we had to be deeper at. That was the one position last year. We had a lot of injuries. I didn't set us up well enough at that position to be able to handle those injuries, which is why Gus Bradley did a tremendous job of really using, our defensive backs in different ways to try and cover up for our injuries at linebacker. But in the end, we need linebackers to play linebacker most often. So Thomas Davis was a player that we thought fit us very well. And if you look at the style, at least how we play. Thomas Davis is a former safety. Kaiser White, who played for us actually won a starting job for us last year as a rookie. He was a safety at West Virginia. And then Drew Tranquil, who we drafted this year in the fourth round, a safety at Notre Dame his first couple years, moved to linebacker. So you can kind of see the style that we look for at linebacker. Thomas fits all that. And watching him practice here in OTAs, it's been fun. I mean, he goes hard all the time. And you can see how players like him that have the talent, have the makeup, and then have the work ethic, you can see why the player, how they turn into the player that they are today. I mean, he is 110% all go every snap in OTAs in March and April and May and June. And to the point where we have to hold him back a little bit. But those are the players we want to add. And, you know, is there value there? I don't really look at value. I don't see his players being on sale or anything like that. But we just thought as a player that he really fit what we look for style-wise, performance-wise, and obviously the makeup part of it too.
Yeah, all gas, no breaks has been the way he's played the game since he's come into the league. Look forward to seeing you and all these Charger players on Wednesday. We're going to be out there. NFL Network will have 3 hours of live coverage there from Chargers camp. So I know everybody will look forward to seeing that. Hey, man, I appreciate so much you giving me your time. And I look forward to visiting with you on Wednesday out there at Chargers camp.
All right, great. We'll see you Wednesday. Take care. Thanks.
All right, Buck. Well, I know you've known Tom for a long time as well, and it's always fascinating to talk with him because we were talking earlier on in the show about always trying to learn, and it's fascinating to me that Tom spends time talking with general managers from all these different sports and try and get as much information and knowledge as you possibly can.
You know, DJ, that's something that we've talked about, and one of the things that we want to bring to the pod down the line is, you know, building a team is building a team in any way, shape, or form, be it in baseball, basketball, be it in business. Being able to identify how to put the best product on the field or in the boardroom or out there for public consumption, that's what you want. And so I am a big believer, as you are, in always learning. And the fact that Tom Telesco is willing to put himself out there and to learn from others, to me, I think it's worthy of a tip of the cap because you never have all the answers. And so sometimes you just kind of want to see how others do it because it can kind of spark an idea that maybe changed the way that you think about building a team.
No, absolutely. And to me, you look at the New England Patriots, they've been the cream of the crop in the National Football League for so long, and Bill Belichick constantly bringing in people from the outside, continuing to learn and to grow, and not only in the football world, talking to people outside that space as well. All right, the other day we did a quick discussion on player stocks that we were buying. Today, Buck, we're talking about team stocks that we're buying. We're just going to buy three stocks. We believe in the future of this team, where they're headed, what they've accomplished in the offseason. I say we work 3-1. I'll give you the floor to go first, and I'll piggyback you here.
Okay, so I'm going to go 3, then you're going to go 3? All right, here we go. So I'm going to start out.
Let's do it.
Like the Carolina Panthers are the third team to keep your eye on. And the reason that I am big on the Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton is coming back. And I expect Cam Newton to come back and return to Superman form. He is really kind of settling into the system under Norv Turner. And I just know that Norv Turner does a great job of elevating quarterbacks. So when you think about Cam Newton's talent, not only as a runner, but the arm talent that he has, we saw him show flashes before the injury a season ago. Now you get him fully back to health. He should play like an all-star. That is why I'm optimistic about the Panthers. Plus, Gerald McCoy joining Dontari Poe on that defense. I think that defense is going to be a little bit better if Brian Burns can give them something. I believe the Panthers are going to be in the mix in the NFC South.
That's a good one there, the Carolina Panthers. That is a tough division. Another division that's going to be tough, you look at the NFC East. I'm going to go to the Eagles as my number three team. That's a stock that I'm buying. Now, I know they, you know, win total last year doesn't wow you, but they get into the postseason. They go win a tough game on the road against the Chicago Bears. I know what this team is made of, and I think Carson Wentz, based off everything I've heard talking to people in that organization, how he's looked, obviously they just gave him the new contract. I think he's due for a very big year with all the weaponry he has around him. We talked about him just the other week when you were mentioning the best group of receivers and the variety they can throw at you with an Alshon Jeffrey, bringing back a DeSean Jackson. Everything I've heard in the offseason, it's been an outstanding run there for Nelson Aguilar. So you bring in a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. They've got Ertz. They've got Goddard. They have so many weapons around him, and they've built depth in that offensive line to be able to withstand any injuries. So I think offensively they're going to score a bunch of points, and I think defensively, again, they can throw waves at you up front with that defensive line. I'm buying a lot of stock here in the Philadelphia Eagles. I think they're going to win this division. I think they're a threat to go a long way in the postseason.
I mean, I like what they're doing. I like what they're building. I like the way this team is headed. look, you got the quarterback on the contract. You got him done. He's going to be there for a while. He's going to have more confidence because you really have shown that long-term commitment. And I think he's going to bounce back to being the guy that played at an MVP caliber his second season. And so Philadelphia Eagles are squarely in the mix. I'm going to go with a team in that division, and I'm going to say that they are on the rise, even though they made the playoffs a season ago. How about the Dallas Cowboys? The Dallas Cowboys are a team that I'm excited about because defensively, Chris Richard has done a great job of getting this team up and going. They are playing fast. They're playing physical. They fly to the ball with reckless abandon. DeMarcus Lawrence is signed, lock, stock, and barrel. Then you have Jalen Smith and LVE, Leighton Vander Esch. You have Sean Lee there still being the mentor. And then in the back end, Byron Jones was playing at an all-pro level a season ago. I think he continues to get better under Richard. And then offensively, a full offseason for Amari Cooper to settle in and get comfortable with Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott coming back, and then a new play caller in Kellen Moore. If Kellen Moore brings any of that dynamic shifting and motion and misdirection that we saw him execute at Boise as a quarterback, I think this offense has a chance to really make a major jump.
Yeah, a lot of pressure there on Kellen Moore. Get that offense cranked up, and going to be a fun division race to watch there, the Cowboys and the Eagles. Redskins, very competitive football team as well. The New York Giants, we'll see what that team looks like offensively in the upcoming season. Number two for me, I'm going to go Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a team not far removed from the discussion is, does this team have the most talent in the NFL? That's how deep that roster was coming off that playoff appearance where they go into Pittsburgh and get them, and very competitive against the New England Patriots. Now, it all fell apart last year. The quarterback play was not where it needed to be. You go bring in a Nick Foles. I think they'll be better in that department. Offensive line-wise, Cam Robinson, I thought last year, man, did they miss him. Getting him back is going to be big for this offense. And then defensively, there's just too much talent for them not to play at a high level. I think you see a bounce-back year. And keep an eye on this one. I know Josh Allen comes in, fell under their lap in the draft, talented edge rusher from Kentucky. But Yannick Ngakoue has long been one of the better edge rushers that doesn't get discussed in the NFL. And now having a legitimate, viable threat on the other side in Josh Allen, I think Yannick Ngakoue, he's a legit NFL Defensive Player of the Year candidate, Buck. He's got the ability to get up there and post huge sack numbers, and I think he does that this year.
Look, he has to do it. This team is under the pressure. They have to get back to being a team that is really in contention of winning the AFC South. This is a team that has all the talent that you want. They just got to play the right way. A team that I believe is going to play the right way is a team that I believe could be the most talented team in the National Football League. How about the Cleveland Browns? I'm going all in on the Cleveland Browns. And this is a hard one for me because, look, I wonder, how are you going to do it with a young coach that is just kind of making his way in Freddie Kitchens? How's the second-year quarterback in Baker Mayfield going to handle all the personalities that he has at his disposal? But Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, you look in the backfield. With Nick Chubb, you have Kareem Hunt, who's eventually going to be a contributor to this team. That offensive line is solid. David Njoku should take a major jump. And then they have the luxury of playing behind what I think is going to be a top defense. This defense is loaded. Olivier Vernon, Jordan Miles, Garrett. All the weapons that they have kind of added on both sides of the ball, plus Steve Wilks, the defense coordinator, who I believe is an upgrade over Greg Williams, there's no reason why the Cleveland Browns shouldn't win the AFC North. I know it's a lot of pressure, but, man, this team is loaded. I expect big things in the dog pound.
Yeah, look, one of us had to say something about the Cleveland Browns. I mean, the talent is – you can't ignore it. I mean, there's tremendous amount of talent that on this roster built by John Dorsey. My number one team, though, I'm going to go to the NFC. I'm going to go to the NFC West, and I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers is a stock I would be pushing all in right now on the 49ers because we got to stick to what we believe. We talk about on this show all the time. We believe great championship rosters are built up front. And that starts really with the defensive line. Can you hunt the quarterback? And first and foremost, you got to have the quarterback position. Who's improved more from last season to this season at those two spots than the 49ers? You get Jimmy Garoppolo, hopefully healthy, who is perfectly built to play in this Shanahan offense. We've seen that. Mm-hmm. Just get 16 games out of him. You're going to see more production from that position. And offensively, you look at the weaponry that they have around him. Go get a Deebo Samuel, a Jalen Hurd. Mix him with George Kittle, one of the best tight ends in the NFL. They have plenty to be successful offensively, but it starts there with the quarterback. And then defensive line-wise, Who's made two greater additions than what they got with Nick Bosa and Dee Ford? I mean, elite-level pass rushers. I know Bosa's injured right now. He's going to be okay. He'll be ready to go for the start of the season. And you put those dudes next to DeForest Buckner, one of the best young defensive linemen in the NFL, that's a stock I'm buying.
Look, I'm buying it as well. And one of the reasons why I'm buying it is because I believe that defense that you alluded to, that front for that those pass rushers, I believe they may have one of the best bullpens when it comes to closers. Dee Ford joining DeForest Buckner, having Nick Bosa that you also can throw in the mix. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to harass the quarterback whenever they want to. Just a matter of how aggressive is Robert Saleh going to be. And then offensively, I just can't wait to see what Kyle Shanahan does with Jimmy Garoppolo and the weapons that he has at his disposal.
Yeah, those are the three stocks that we're each buying here with teams. Let us know what you think. Hop on Twitter and give us some feedback. I'm sure you agree with us 100%, as you guys always do. All right, Buck. I think that's gonna do it for us today, man. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, man. This is a great pod. I think the Tom Colesto stuff is outstanding. Love learning about the team building process, and I think he's done a great job with the team that he's assembled in LA. This is a team that certainly should be in contention, not only for winning the division, but they are a Super Bowl team. I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Yeah, this has been a fun show. Again, we've teased it a little bit. We've got some cool things coming later on in the summer. We've been diligently working on our prototype series. We're going to release it, I believe. The plan is in July. Position by position, you talk about going to scouting school. We're going to take our listeners to scouting school right here on the Move the Sticks podcast, going position by position. How do we evaluate the position? Finding a player, the great player at that position, what made them great? Talking to different coaches or personnel guys that have scouted or been around great players, what do they believe makes a player great? What's different now than it was 10 years ago, and how's it going to change 10 years from now? So we're going to go position by position, and it's a series that I'm fired up from what we've already been able to gather, Buck. It's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. It's one of the chances that we talk about letting our listeners and viewers go behind the curtain. We can give them a little behind-the-curtain look.
Yeah, that's coming your way. So be on the lookout for that. Hytham producing, great job today. Appreciate you guys listening, downloading, subscribing. And again, if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we do appreciate that. We've continued to carry this momentum through the offseason. There is no offseason in the NFL. We've proven that right here on the Move the Sticks pod. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.